Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a probably bumper edition of our regular Monday stream.
Yes, I think we've been quite well with having shorter streams as of late and keeping them sort of more condensed.
Yes.
But as you have sort of collated stuff on this subject, there is too much to maybe fit into a normal time slot. I think we should probably still be able to get it all done in hopefully 2 hours at the most.
Hopefully, yes.
But we're probably going to be quite quick with stuff. So
we're going to have to be quite brisk. And those of you who are familiar with this subject matter, we are having to skip large sections of it, honestly. We'll mention quite a lot of stuff in passing, but I want to focus in on very specific areas of the prison disclosures, the Snowden files, and kind of the drip feed of intelligence documents that we got that really were never collated properly. There was a lot of piecemeal reporting. There were a lot of individual revelations, and there were a lot of actually limited hangouts, really.
Yes.
We'll notice that this is kind of a series of segmented revelations, and nobody really, even, you know, especially within the mainstream, took all of these and ran with them. There have been documentaries that focus on Snowden as a person, some of the international whistleblower angle of it. That isn't really interesting to me,
yes.
Really. That stuff is quite well explored, and that stuff is quite well gone over.
You ask anyone who's like vaguely aware of stuff that happened on the internet like 5, 10 years ago, and you go, oh, Edward Snowden, but yeah, he's the man that showed us our iPhones are all listening to us. Which in some sense is kind of true, but misses the wider...
It misses the wider implications.
Legal sort of remit and infrastructure around that allows for the NSA to listen to you through your phone.
Yes.
And that's like that's the very end bit of the process. And once you begin to understand everything that needs to be done to get there, there is so much more going on than just them listening to you on your phone.
But before we do get started, I will do the normal YouTube-y things. We are still monetized somehow.
We love the nation of Israel, of course.
Yes, we do. Send your sons for Israel. But
we require only your firstborn sons.
We support the Jews. jingle. It's it's possible to donate to us via Super Chat if you want a question answered. The best way to do it, though, is still through our Streamlabs. It takes less of a cut. You can become a member. Memberships are probably the best way of helping us on a recurring basis right now, since we don't have things like Subscribestar. Since it's...
You can also support us on Substack,
yes,
if you wish to do that as well.
I was about to mention that. We do also have the Substack, which is linked down below. I will also very quickly put it in the chat as I scramble around for a link that I should already have. We will have bi-weekly content on the Substack for the foreseeable future, I would imagine. There's a lot of...
We will try to.
yes, okay. We'll try to. There will at least be weekly content on
there. Yeah.
We are trying to write up a lot of our more kind of poignant stream notes as articles are a bit more readable if people want to do more of their own research or revisit topics. So there'll be a bit of that going on, and also more of our slightly shorter form original work. I've got stuff I want to put up there anyway. If you can't, you know, I know you think you might have two a week in you sometimes, but I have other stuff too. So it'll be a mix from both of us.
Anyway, I think we should get moving, because otherwise we're going to be here all night.
Yeah. You kind of have to do the preamble.
For the first
5 minutes. It's... I want to preface this discussion, like I said, that if you talk about Prism, everyone will have a vague idea of what you're talking about. If you talk about Snowden, people will have an idea of that he leaked a bunch of files. They might know he went to China.
Leo's got the right idea. Get on with it.
Yes, get on with it. Enough faffing. We've been told.
Give us more money. We'll do less faff. We might just hold the content hostage until then.
Evelyn, no. I made all these notes. I already did all the work. no, it's... It, it, yeah, it is... The Katy Perry. No. It's the Pink Floyd album Dark Side of the Moon, which I've only just realized how Dark Side of the Moon that thumbnail is. It is extremely Dark Side of the Moon. But what are you going to do with a prison? Everyone will understand bits and pieces. They won't know the full picture. They likely will not know the largest parts of it. And they certainly will not have extrapolated out to talk about and think about the political implications.
Yeah, I think in the same sense where we have covered things like UBI or digital ID or, you know, sometimes what looks like three or four problems that are covered in the press over a period of time that are interrelated but never directly connected.
Yeah.
And it's when you go from one state to the other that you get the whole thing as one big picture. And hopefully we will sort of try and demonstrate all of it.
Yes. Again, I want to preface this by saying this is just what Edward Snowden had access to.
Mm.
As is mentioned frequently in these documents, there are levels of classification above what he had. And there are things that The Guardian, Glenn Greenwald, The Intercept, and other media people were either denoticed about, or they willfully destroyed in return for, well, basically saving their own careers.
As we put these things together over the course of the next sort of two-ish hours, we will basically put together a report on Prism that has actually never been put together before. We are going to collate details that do exist publicly, but have existed all across the web and sparse and
obscure
corners.
I will credit a couple of places, but it's a couple of enthusiast kind of DEFCON-style Web 2.0 blogs that did a lot of this stuff. They've been invaluable in piecing this together, and I will shout those people out, you know, when we get there. But it's very few, and you have to know the keywords already to be able to find these things. If you type into YouTube, for example, GCHQ and the code name of one of these large programs that they operated, you'll get GCHQ recruitment material for about 7 pages. This is deliberately difficult to find these days. A lot of it has been put behind. A lot of it has been put behind a paywall. A lot of it has gone missing. A lot of it has simply just been neglected as the news cycle has moved on.
See, there would be people who would be like, oh, it's dead internet theory. These pages have just been allowed to sort of disappear. It's like, no, this stuff is being deliberately hidden.
I would say so to a degree, yes. But like I said, we will now, as you say, get on with it. Because we have a lot to cover. I will also say that this... that we would have the Glow Watch up permanently if we were to do Glow Watch.
Yeah, grab your sunglasses.
I might leave
yeah,
the Glow Fellow, let's say, in the top left corner permanently.
He's a Glow Brother.
He's a Glow Brother, yes.
As opposed to a Soul Brother.
I will also say that this definitely breaks our federal incandescent scale.
Oh, off the charts. Off the charts.
We've not only shifted out of park, we've basically shifted into turbo. So
we've hit the two-step and we're...
Yes, there's a lot of stuff to go through. I have a lot of slides that I've made up as well for your convenience. But I will start where most people start when they research something like Prism. As we frequently do, actually, as kind of a jumping-off point, is the incomplete picture you will get from Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Wikipedia has quite a self-contained Prism article. There's another vertical which is about the kind of mass surveillance disclosures in the abstract, but it's poorly organized, and I think they could do a much better job with it. And again, this is not a resource I use myself. Sometimes I will use Wikipedia just for ease and also just to audit what it says, so you can get an idea of what the normies, you know, the normies in quotes think and what the average Joe gets when he tries to research a topic. But Prism itself, that most people would recognize, I'll just read it. It's a code name for a program under which the United States National Security Agency collects internet communications from various U.S. internet. The program is also known by the SIGAD US 984NX, which is, we'll get into a lot of code names and a few designations later because the documents make sense. Prism collects stored internet communications based on demands made to internet companies such as Google, under Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. Memorize that. That will be referred to quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Among other things, the NSA can use these prism requests to target communications that were encrypted when they travelled across the internet backbone. Mm. I wonder who set up the internet backbone. I wonder if we might get into that during the course of this.
Yes.
To focus on stored data that telecommunication filtering systems discarded earlier and to get data that is easier to handle. Prism began in 2007 in the wake of the passage of the Protect America Act under the Bush administration. The program is operated under the supervision of the US Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA Court or FISC, pursuant to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA of course. Its existence was leaked 6 years... Oh, no, it's been covered. There we go.
Yeah.
Its existence was leaked 6 years later by NSA contractor Edward Snowden, who warned that the extent of mass data collection was far greater than the public knew and included what he characterised as dangerous and criminal activities. The disclosures were published by The Guardian and The Washington Post on June 6, 2013.
Edit the noise gate there, but that is kind of the overview version you get of Prism. But there was a lot of revelations that came out. The first of which, we'll get to the actual Prism slides in a second, because they contain a lot of the stems where you can do your own research on many things. And they are a useful resource. But the first report that was made was on June 6th in The Guardian.
Warning, this article is more than 9 years old.
Yeah, we get those quite a lot. This is by
everybody's new favourite reformed lefty, Glenn Greenwald.
Glenn Greenwald, honorary member of the intellectual dark web, etc., etc. And insider of many a Twitter thread now. He's become quite the darling, and this really is what made his career, at least redefined his career up until this point. The Snowden revelations and what became the Prism Files. But the American market especially was exposed to this primarily through the lens of metadata collection. A lot of people, if they remember anything about the Prism program, will remember that phone records from AT&T and Verizon was reported first here, were collected and collated by the US government specifically on US citizens. Because, you know, to track phone calls that come into the US, they have to be calling someone in the US who is more likely than not, maybe not in California, but more likely than not, a US citizen. So the initial revelations on June 9th, and then there were some more about email metadata on June 27th, although there were a lot of drip-fed stories, a lot of drip-fed revelations. We're not going to get into the chronology really of them. We will be here too long. This is not, it's not about the process of reporting. It's not about The Guardian. It's not really about Glenn Greenwald. It's about the limited picture that both the UK and US population got of what was in the Snowden files. Because as the revelations went on, the story morphed into something much larger, and there was nothing to preface that. Mm. There was no... They should have really published an index of what was going on.
Yeah.
As we will be doing in a few minutes.
We're not directly suggesting that you should no longer trust what Glenn Greenwald has to say because of this, but if you wish to extrapolate out whether or not he was involved in a kind of, I don't know, large limited hangout problem, or sorry, program to cover up how much surveillance was actually going on at the time, that's up to you.
I would say that even with the best will in the world, he's still putting these through The Guardian, which has to work within the UK press legal framework.
Mm.
And as we will see, a lot of stuff was not disclosed, and a lot of evidence was destroyed as a compromise to have these exclusives. This was also in partnership with the Washington Post and partly in partnership with Der Spiegel, mostly because I think they were worried about one of them being just completely taken down.
Well, yeah, we can also make the same point that was made in the stream about Belgium's White March.
Yeah.
Look at this and then think about all the times that conservative commentators tell you about the rule of law.
Yes.
Or the Constitution or democracy or anything that sounds like, pardon me, some sort of like high school level civics class about people mutually coming together and compromising, and we have a role and a remit, and everyone's accountable to some other body. And once again, we're just going to prove that that's all nonsense, but that should be nothing new.
Well, basically, the story you get here, to sum both of them up, the FISA court, which is the Foreign Intelligence Security Agency courts, they are essentially printing blank warrants. And the FISA court warrants say that you can collect the phone records, the metadata, the who's calling who and how long the call was, for basically as many American citizens as are being phoned from abroad or as are being phoned perhaps by targets. And then you get the idea that the NSA collected USA email records in bulk for more than 2 years. FISA court renewed collection every 90 days. Again, they were being handed blank email warrants to collect what is considered metadata. And it was because of a loophole they found in the Patriot Act, which says that metadata technically isn't surveillance. And they use the justification of, I think, the library book clause.
Well, it's the same thing to do with cookies as well. Yes. Your cookies can be monitored because technically they're not your data. It's like the website's data and... Ugh.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to get into some technical details before we get much further, because PRISM is specifically PRISM, is what's known as downstream collection.
Mm.
And what was reported first, the metadata, is technically upstream or provider collection. It is collection directly from a provider. It is not something...
It's not a guy going out there with an aerial and like catching your phone call and like intercepting it between where you are and the tower. It is actually the company that sends the information to the tower directly sending the information to you first.
Well, this is from the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which again is one of the better people to collate this. They do a little bit of an explainer here, although the chronology, unfortunately, in terms of what people knew when is a bit messed up. So a lot of these, again, are a bit limited. But the EFF talks about upstream versus PRISM. After Edward Snowden leaked NSA slides in 2013, two names became synonymous with the agency's vast online spying powers, Upstream and PRISM. These two types of surveillance work in different ways but pose similar threats to the privacy of internet users around the world, including innocent Americans. Both also fall under a surveillance authority known as Section 702, a provision of law that, when enacted by the FISA Amendments Act in 2008, is set to expire at the end of 2017. I would say that some of this stuff is factually correct, but also, as we will see, Section 702 didn't really need to be there because they had a lot of this in place already, and a lot of the specific stuff overseen by the FISA court is the most limited stuff. The unlimited stuff actually comes from GCHQ and the foreign partners, as we'll get onto later. In early 2017, the intelligence community rebranded these two kinds of surveillance, referring to them as upstream and downstream. The names have changed, but the surveillance is the same. Upstream surveillance involves collecting communications as they travel over the internet backbone, and downstream surveillance, formerly PRISM, involves collection of communications from companies like Google, Facebook, and Yahoo, generally stored records as well.
Mm. And both upstream and downstream surveillance, the intelligence community collects and searches communications it believes are related to targeted selectors. It can target any foreign person located abroad who is believed to possess foreign intelligence information. Intelligence agencies use a secret and broad definition for foreign intelligence information that has, in the past, included things like information about foreign affairs. With a definition that broad, the intelligence community could easily target groups of people like journalists. Oh no, the poor journalists. Reporting on foreign affairs, foreign governments, or entrepreneurs working to expand their businesses to new countries. I mean, maybe it's not worth fully mentioning now, but there is a reason why these programs seem to focus on foreign information.
Yes.
Because one of the ways that a program like PRISM would be held accountable is that it would be unconstitutional to look at the data of Americans living within America, because there would be some right against that. So instead, what you do is you get someone else from the UK using a similar program measuring the data coming one way, and then you swap it around and have the Americans look at other people's data.
You're right there, music. First do something, then legalize it. Very Tony Blair.
Yeah.
Basically, the capability outran the law to such an extent that they had to have secret courts which made secret judgments which printed them blank warrants.
Mm.
And even then, they went around that.
But it's also, it's like a basic element of competent governance. You're not going to engage in some form of, you know, military practice or security practice at the behest of a vote.
Yeah.
Or a referendum, or even have, you know, a room full of MPs and representatives debate the policy. Because one, most of them aren't going to know how to enact this stuff or what it even means. And latterly, by the time you go through all the process of indecision, the thing itself would probably be useless.
I would say that the distinction I want to make here is that PRISM, as we know it, is downstream surveillance. And it makes up a tiny, tiny fraction of both the $800 million budget of US NSA surveillance at the time, and it also makes a tiny number of what they refer to as generated records. A generated record is just an individual piece of information.
Well, yeah, that's the Wikipedia articles. Well, PRISM was a program. No, PRISM was one of many programs.
Yes, and it was the junior partner in these programs, especially in terms of records generated. And as we'll see, some of them move into the billions of informational pieces.
Some of the chats get the idea we have to pass the bill to see what's in it.
It's that, but on steroids.
Yeah.
It's they have to pass the bill in secret via a secret court. You cannot see what's in it. You don't even know that the court exists.
But again, I think it makes perfect sense, though. You couldn't competently engage in information espionage in an accountable and democratic fashion. Because, you know, it's not behavior that works through mutual recognition of principles or compromise, even.
I will say that this is the most legally, like, overseen part of it.
Mm.
And it is the least dodgy part of it. PRISM itself is one of the better elements, in terms of the way the US looks, of the Snowden revelations. I'll get into some details in a sec, but I want to thank electrospaces.net. Look at this. It's a bit granddad's blog, but it's great. The information here is well presented.
I would trust the information from this website.
Yes, it's well presented. It's well done. And as we'll see, projects such as Windstop, Muscular, Bull Run, you'll learn what all of these mean. They dwarfed PRISM in terms of budget and information collected. The NSA via the GCHQ tapped the trunk cables of the internet, which both relayed the information between the data centers of people like Google and also just carried an imprint of the entire internet that the UK was viewing moving through it.
Well, furthermore, many of these elements, the Incensor program, Muscular, Bull Run, these other things we're going to get into, are not, or were ever, sanctioned by some sort of FISA court.
No.
There is not even any judicial fingerprint on this stuff. This is entirely like top-level security people all working on their own little project, basically in a completely sort of like sealed black box.
There is no law, as we will see, that governs the practices that took place here, because they are both extra-legal and global in scale. This is beyond kind of the United States gathering information. Is the United States, via their empire, gathering information and doing so in a way that by design cannot have oversight.
I mean, this crosses. This is even going past the whole, you know, politics is like the brother to war or something like that. It's like they've gone directly from policy and political instruments just fully into the remit of war and espionage. There is no other way to see this all through.
These are programs that have largely existed since the 1970s, and they're ramping up in terms of how they interact with the Patriot Act and 9/11, started under Blair and Bush and continued under Obama and David Cameron. They are multi-party, they are multi-administration, they are multi-agency, they are multinational. They transcend borders, politics. They exist in a realm above politicians, the judiciary, the legal system. They interface directly with the elite class, and they give us a window into the fact that party politics within individual countries is completely illusory when compared to the sovereign power of the security state.
Yeah, but, I like Hydrosphere's point in the chat there, though. Any web dev that actually knows CSS should be fired immediately. This aesthetic is Kino.
It also loads really quickly. It's an This is an extremely efficient website, which is probably how it's managed to stave off being buried by Google.
This comes, what, just over a year after the original Snowden-based revelations that Glenn Greenwald gave us in
about 18 months. This was collated, but all of this was drip-fed to people. This is a roundup rather than a revelation itself. But as one, I want to get into the document here again, and I'll go through some slides that I prepared. I'm going to have to go through some slightly dense terminology, but I also want to go here. There's just one called Cloud Wards here, but this just goes into some of the other things. It talks about Prism, but it also talks about just like warrantless wiretapping that FISA did.
Wasn't that the whole crux of the Obama administration's investigation of Trump in 2015?
Yes.
Is that it all started with numerous unwarranted phone taps.
It talks about
months at a time.
It talks about Tempora, which we're going to. It talks about Tau, which we'll talk about a little bit, which is basically the only like hacker man part of this, really.
Can we go back to the previous one, though? Just the intro in that one, I think, gave us some...
Yes,
I'm talking about the previous article we had up. Some of the sections in there, I think, might give some people a better idea of the scale of what we're talking about here.
You read this, and then I'll go over some ancillary points.
So, Incensor are how NSA and GCHQ are tapping internet cables. Recently disclosed documents show that the NSA's fourth largest cable tapping program, codenamed Incensor, pulls its data from just one single source, a submarine fiber optic cable linking Asia with Europe. That's only the fourth largest one, eh?
Yes. The two largest ones are just the American trunk cables, I believe.
But it goes to show that the amount of stuff they are scrubbing here to look through.
Well, we'll go through. Incensor on its own created 14 billion records a month.
The next line here. Yeah. Until now, it was only known that Incensor was a subprogram of Windstop, and that it collected some 14 billion pieces of internet data a month. The latest revelations now say that these data were collected with the help of British company Cable and Wireless, codename Gerontic, which is basically BT.
Yes.
British Telecommunications, now part of Vodafone, at a location in Cornwall in the UK, codenamed Nigella.
No, it's Vodafone. It is. We'll get on. BT was involved as well under a separate program. That's just Cable and Wireless.
Ah, right. For this first time, this gives us a view on the whole interception chain, from the parent program all the way down to the physical interception facility. Here we will piece together what is known about these different stages and programs from recent
I'll go over this in some detail, because this is the best source for the GCHQ surveillance. But I want to give people a top-level view here. We talked about Tempora. We will not be talking about Dish Fire in detail, which basically is the idea that...
That's your text messages.
Yeah, that's text messages being collected. And also,
For example, on average, NSA was able to extract information related to 1.6 million border crossings and over 800,000 financial transactions through text-to-text payments.
I always write a small get, but Somali get, which is them basically just surveilling the Bahamas blanket. It's just all these, we're not going to talk about Dish Fire, we're not going to talk about the Bahamas stuff. All that stuff was revealed, but it is slightly ancillary.
It's interesting as well that that one there was, the intercept showed that the US DEA opened a backdoor to the country's cellular network. So that wasn't even the NSA specifically, that was just like the Drug Enforcement Administration doing their own dirty work.
As we'll go through, the NSA, DEA, and FBI are completely fluid in how this information is used, and there was no limit onto what agency could use it and who could tap into the NSA databases. I'll go through that one yet, but I'm going to take you through, I'm afraid, some of the terminology here. So we've already talked about some of these, but you're going to have to become familiar with basically what all of these mean. So PRISM is specifically the program by which individual records were handed over in warrantless surveillance. Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, PalTalk, AOL, Skype, YouTube, Apple gave the NSA direct access to its user information via the FISA warrants. The oldest operation listed here is something known as Blarney, which is quite tendrily in terms of what it does because it's so old and stapled together. It's collated upstream collection via cables and exchanges of data relating to foreign nationals. It is sifted by the telecommunication companies themselves at the behest of the NSA, then handed over. It's the oldest, as I said, revealed, dating from 1978, and the original passing of the original version of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And it is one of the elements I think we'd expect the US to be doing, in that they have persons of interest that the phone companies monitor, and then they send the information to the government if they think it's relevant, and they have to justify it's relevant via a warrant. And that was the bulk of what was actually done in terms of individual FISA warrants, I believe. Stormbrew is the metadata and bulk foreign call collection via Verizon. Fairview is the metadata and bulk foreign call data collection via AT&T. They both had basically their entire networks mapped via a subsidiary and handed over all that metadata to the US government. What is just referred to in the documents as upstream is the tapping of all backbone cables on the US mainland for information on foreign nationals.
Because I think as well, one of the points we sort of discussed when going through some of this stuff ourselves is when you begin to place the larger elements like upstream into these programs, you begin to realize that in some sense, these systems and networks were always going to be set up to be monitored. You know, how would you ever let some other body monitor the key internet exchange from, you know, Asia into America?
Yes.
The idea that would be left to just flow on its own and someone like Google would just, you know, have it running in the background. On the face of it, it sounds like, well, of course that's what they do, but when you realise, you know, from the 70s at least, that someone has consciously in government thought about how to approach this data and how to analyse it, of course they would set up all these systems to do this.
Well, these are the PRISM slides. This is from The Guardian, although they were, again, in The Washington Post, and it talks about the fact that much of the world's communication flow through the US. A target's phone call, email, or chat will likely take the cheapest path, not the direct physical path. Your target's communication could easily be flowing into and through the US. Here we talk about upstream.
Also, let's just quickly go back to that previous statement there, though. Because of the way that the internet functions and how your information can be bounced, say, between one place, then another, and then get to its destination.
Yeah.
They've decided that you have the role and the remit to analyse everything.
Yes.
That
is what's being said. The upstream collection, which shows taps basically on cables, it shows the trunk. It doesn't actually show the one in Europe, but it basically just shows the trunk cables being tapped. Collection of communications on fiber cables and infrastructure as data flows past. Fairview, Storm, Brew, Blarney, and Oakstar. We've talked about some of these. This is metadata collection and direct cable tapping.
Hmm.
As we'll see, they have access to the cable data because they control the encryption. And PRISM, which is collection directly from the servers of these US service providers, Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, PalTalk, AOL, Skype, YouTube, and Apple.
I just like the little, you should use both.
Yes.
Just really driving the point home.
It's worth talking quickly here in terms of PRISM, because I'll quickly just scroll past some of these. It talks about current providers, what you'll get, special requests, what you'll receive. Here is possibly the most damning slide in big tech history, which is dates when PRISM collection began for each provider. And PRISM collection was not challenged legally by these providers. They did so on a partially voluntary basis, and they did so by building backdoors into their services. Microsoft was the original partner, and possibly the most enthusiastic partner.
But what about my Twitter files?
Yeah.
What about Elon Musk and Jack Dorsey and people being shadow banned on Twitter? Does this not matter? Is this all of a sudden irrelevant?
Oh yeah, and somebody just got the reference. Yes, it's called Through a PRISM Dark Line, being mildly pretentious with that, but I thought it was a nice name.
get the Melhouse gifts on the go. We are through the Looking Glass,
people. Yahoo became involved in 2008, Google in 2009, Facebook in 2009, Paltalk, which we've not really seen anymore in 2009, YouTube in 2010, Skype in 2011, AOL in 2011, and Apple was the last holdout, and they were added in October 2012, despite Apple insisting that they never built backdoors into their infrastructure.
Yep.
Here we are. These are your tech companies. And I don't want to belabor the point because I'll probably do another stream on it at some point, but they were paid for this. They collaborated with this willingly. They protested later, but their protestations came across as empty because they were partners in the Prism program. And under US law, to be a provider like this, you have to play ball or you will be removed and replaced with somebody else.
I think there are elements of this as well that become so obvious once you see things from a certain angle. Like, say, for example, you've got Facebook there.
Yeah.
Who was that again? Was it 2010, 2009? Middle of, early 2009.
Yes.
They start working with Prism. Now, because maybe I know too much now, but to me that's of course now obvious. Because yes. Then I look at third world countries, you know, we were listening to one of the Nudge Unit podcasts the other day, where the woman casually discusses the fact that much of the elements of governance in Ecuador is directly tied into Facebook and WhatsApp.
Yes.
That you can engage with, you know, like, what would be the phrase, you know, like your... When you go on like your homepage for a website or an account on something, like your portal, you can access the government portal
through Facebook.
Yeah, through Facebook, because the whole structure is integrated into one another. And I think that's probably just the same here. We just don't see it as much. We believe these things are somehow compartmentalized, they're separate and they exist in different spaces, and they are not all somehow connected by a big web of, you know, security protocols.
Thank you for the donation of £14 there, Proper Horror Show. I can't watch live, but buy some Tapest beer. Okay, we will do. We do like some good Tapest beer. But I would like to impress on people that the big tech monopolies exist because they are arms of the security state. And that is the major reason they exist and part of the major infrastructure. Again, I don't want to get into it. I'll probably do it in a future stream, but who do you think builds these databases for the NSA? They don't build them themselves. Amazon and Google built a large part of the infrastructure that things like Prism are made from and where the files are stored.
Yeah, it's like Amazon has already built all the databases and infrastructure required for the UK government to engage in the Attributes Network and Digital ID. It all exists there as Amazon Web Service infrastructure already. They just have to legalize what they're doing. But we're nearly 40 minutes in here, so we better keep cracking on.
Here we go. Another news story here from The Guardian. Microsoft handed the NSA access to encrypted messages. Secret files show scale of Silicon Valley cooperation on Prism. Outlook.com encryption unlocked even before the official launch. Which, by the way, is before the FISA extension. That's pre-2008. If we look at who joined when, if we look at the slides here, Microsoft became part of Prism in 2007. The FISA Act modifications were passed in 2008. That chronology doesn't make any sense. There's another quick one for the Wall Street Journal here about the fact that all three major companies in AT&T, Verizon, basically, everyone was involved in the metadata collection.
Sprint, I think, was the other one.
Yeah, Sprint, that. Verizon, and AT&T were all involved. It was not a specific provider. It was the entire industry. But Microsoft was a very enthusiastic partner that went over and above the legal requirements.
Yeah, Skype worked to enable Prism collection of video calls. Company says it is legally compelled to comply. Is there a little comment on that in the bottom of this article here?
I don't believe so. I'm not sure. Let me have a look. It only says compelled once, so I can have a look here if it has. Sorry, I've completely forgotten what they said. Yeah, in a statement, oh, it's a bit of a waffling statement. Basically, they just said that they were forced to do it.
Yeah, scroll up just quickly again. Second, our compliance team examines all demands very closely and reject them if we believe they aren't valid. Third, we ever comply with orders about specific accounts or identify... Oh, pardon me. Oh, but gassy this evening. We would not respond to the kind of blanket orders discussed in the press over the past few weeks.
That's a lie.
Yes, quite clearly, given that's what I was looking for, basically.
They decrypted Outlook so that the NSA would have blanket access to it.
But look further here as well, though. Finally, when we upgrade or update products, legal obligations may, in some circumstances, require that we maintain the ability to provide information in response to a law enforcement or national security request. There are aspects of this debate that we wish we were able to discuss more freely. That's why we've argued for additional transparency that would help everyone understand and debate these important issues. That's basically the spokesperson from Microsoft saying the NSA has my balls and I can't do anything about this.
Its Outlook was built with deliberately compromised encryption, as we will get to later, which is standard practice in the industry and has been for a long time, that the NSA sets the encryption standards. And we'll get to direct evidence of that in a second. Sorry, I think I'm on the wrong thing here. I might get back to
I was going to say, you might want to delete some of these here as we move through them.
I'm afraid a lot of them we will be using. I'm jumping around a little bit here. I can get rid of these anyway, so I'm quickly going through. I haven't been through that yet. But... they're a very enthusiastic partner in the arrangement. But I do have a bit more to get through in terms of our slides here. So I've gone to the US side of it, but the other part of it is what we talked about in Winstop. I'd like to familiarize you all with these terms before we go much further. Winstop is what's known as second party collection. All the information that the US cannot collect themselves, but their intelligence partners can. This is how information on US citizens is laundered and how the Five Eyes all swap info on each other's populations for blanket surveillance.
This is their sort of excuse that, some of the information gets bounced around multiple sources before it either travels through or enters the US. So you should collect that data as far as GCHQ or German Special Forces or whoever it is.
I'll be bringing this up in multiple places, but... this is the practice of what I would refer to as intelligence laundering. There are no laws that prevent the NSA from blanket surveillance of all UK nationals.
And vice versa, there is no laws that stop GCHQ from blanket monitoring all data from US nationals.
So that's what they did. Essentially, the NSA tapped cables and surveyed anyone's traffic who was not a US citizen that went through the US. And GCHQ tapped the cables and surveyed everyone's traffic. And they didn't even bother to exclude UK people from that.
it's very simple, though. It goes to show the sort of international level of anarchy that still exists for these sort of sovereign bodies. Provided you've got one body that can take the data of everyone but its host people, and you have another body that does the same, if the two of them work together, you have an international surveillance net.
Again, this is just the arrangement between GCHQ and the NSA, which I will say was the most profitable in terms of data that was arranged. But the NSA, as we will get to later, I think has arrangements with up to 33 countries in terms of second and third party access. But second party specifically, i.e. the Five Eyes, produced the bulk of records when compared to PRISM. So that's what I wanted to impress on people is how this arrangement works. Incensor is the largest foreign bulk data production program that is detailed in the Snowden files. It's the fourth largest in terms of scope overall, but it's the biggest one that we have such detail on. And is part of Winstop, GCHQ-led corporation. Blanket tapping of undersea cables at landfall point in Butte, Cornwall, effectively surveils all traffic passing through the cables and passes it on to the NSA. Muscular is the GCHQ-led program to specifically intercept data center traffic of large providers such as Yahoo, Microsoft, and Google. This gave them a total picture of the inside of these providers.
Well, so that's basically like a British domestic version of Prism.
Yes. But it was bigger than Prism in that it basically gave them blanket low-level access to... you have to have duplicate records, basically, to make things interoperable.
Hmm.
So the UK data center of Yahoo will have a copy of a lot of the information...
Already gathered by the American one, and then they can cross-check everything.
Yeah. Or they'll have records there, you know, they'll have edge servers.
There's, again, one of these kind of situations where for them to argue that they are fully meeting the remit of a surveillance system, that they have to then do this.
Yes.
You know, oh, well, even though there's no actual procedure or international law that stipulates how we go about this, we're just going to have these two agencies work hand in hand anyway because it means we can't be caught out. And we can basically brute force a lot of what we're doing.
Tempura is the code name for the massive GCHQ computer system where all this data is accessed and buffered for the undersea cables. It essentially buffers as much information as humanly possible from the cable intercepts. They were spying on so many people with so much data, the problem became the amount that they had. And sifting it and using it, they had... too much. It's part of an interoperable system with the NSA, though, as we get onto here. There's another few terms I'm going to go through before we explain them in more detail. X-KeyScore is the NSA's central computer system for searching and analyzing global internet data, which it collects in real time. The NSA has shared KeyScore with other intelligence agencies. It forms the basis of GCHQ's Tempura. Bullrun, which is another very, very scary aspect. Using partnerships with telecommunications and tech companies, Bullrun has one of the largest budgets of all of these programs. Its main purpose is anti-encryption and having backdoors built into all forms of security. This is how bulk collection of supposedly encrypted ISP data was possible. The ISPs work with the NSA and GCHQ. They also build backdoors into all services and even physical devices, warping the marketplace and industry around them. Tau is the only direct targeting vector I found in these files. It's hacking of networks and physical placement of digital information collection devices. It's like a small add-on. It has one of the lowest budgets, and it's the only like direct intervention methods that they detail here.
But this Bullrun program here as well, though, you know, whatever happened to privacy or consumer choice, you know. But again, the limited hangout view is, oh, well, your phone happens to have a microphone in it and the NSA can use that to listen to you. Well, what if something like a program like Bullrun within it specifies, oh, by the way, as a phone manufacturer, you must give us a microphone in the phone that we can compromise?
Well, that's part of it. That is what it was. We have direct evidence of that. That's not paranoia. That's just the truth of how the marketplace works.
Mm.
And that's what I want to get into now, really, is some of, I guess, the more detailed picture of some of this. Because I need to get the document back up. Sorry, I'm a little bit lost in my own notes here. We've talked about the enthusiastic involvement of big tech. We've talked about Microsoft being a partner here. But I just want to read some of the sections here from this article. Just find the bit that I'm looking for here. Oh God, there's so much use of the program. I'm gonna need to find this specific thing that I'm looking for. I'll be here all day. There we go. The program actively engages U.S. and foreign IT industries to covertly influence and/or overtly leverage their commercial products designs. The document states, none of the companies involved in such partnerships are named. These details are guarded by still high levels of classification, which in reviewing some of the requests that were made later and made public later with Guardian, this is probably a lie.
Mm.
I believe, and I strongly believe, that the Prism files contained many of the names, or at least code names you can unmask, of these providers build backdoors.
It would be stupid for it not to.
Yes.
I mean, the Prism program would be useless as an entity on its own. It is only as a sort of limited hangout way to allow the regime to explain away all the other aspects in case anyone found out about them. Because I think we should maybe just carry on one of the two other bits here.
Among other things, the program is designed to insert vulnerabilities into commercial encryption systems. These would be known to the NSA, but to no one else, including ordinary customers who are tellingly referred to in the document as adversaries.
These design changes make the systems in question exploitable through SIGINT collection, with foreknowledge of the modification to the consumer and other adversaries. However, the system security remains intact.
Which is impossible.
Yes.
If the vulnerability exists and it's deliberate, someone else will find the vulnerability.
Can we go back up again there?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The document sets out in clear terms the program's broad aims, including making commercial encryption software, in quotes, more traceable to NSA attacks, by shaping the worldwide marketplace. Shaping a marketplace. How do you do that? I thought it was a market. And continuing efforts to break into the encryption used by the next generation of 4G phones. Among the specific accomplishments for 2013, the NSA expects the program to obtain access to data flowing through a hub for a major communications provider and to a major internet peer-to-peer voice and text communication systems. So your Telegram's already broken.
Yes.
The 4G phones that they're talking about breaking into here were designed with the role and remit that they must have a back door.
Again, there's a Der Spiegel article we'll go through later, which unmasks... That's where some of the code names we came across came from. But The Guardian and Glenn Greenwald agreed not to reveal a lot of these telecommunications and content partners in exchange for being able to handle, you know, certain amounts of the prison files. The original hard drives that were handed over were destroyed, and they were only allowed to report a limited version of what was there to remain a going concern. These were done for commercial reasons and done for career reasons, and they are part of why I think these were drip-fed in the way that they were, and why we don't know who was involved much as we should.
You've got a further note here. It shows that the agency worked covertly to get its own version of a draft security standard issued.
Let me find this in the document. Yeah. There we go. The documents show that the agency... go ahead with it.
Already achieved another of the goals laid out in the budget request, so on and so forth. Independent security experts have long suspected the NSA has been introducing weaknesses into security standards. It shows the agency worked covertly to get its own version of a draft security standard issued by the US National Institute of Standards and Technology, approved for worldwide use in 2006, so even 2 years... before the original FISA thing that just allows PRISM to exist, they were already engaging in forcing through legal documents that would demand a standard of design for all software and hardware with things like cameras and microphones in them.
Eventually, the NSA became the sole editor, the document says. So the NSA are the ones who set encryption standards in the US.
Mm.
The NSA's code word for its encryption program, Bull Run, and then it talks about Edge Hill as well, which is the UK version, which of course is the UK version, and there'll be an Australian version. All the Five Eyes will have a version of this derived from the same NSA technology.
In the same way that they all nowadays have their own version of an online safety bill in the works.
Yes.
Project Bull Run deals with the NSA's ability to defeat the encryption used in specific network communication technologies. Bull Run involves multiple sources, all of which are extremely sensitive. The document reveals that the agency has capabilities against widely used online protocols, such as HTTPS, voice over IP, and secure SSL stuff, used to protect online shopping and banking. So no surprises there either. That not only is it phone and text encryption, but all online encryption involving transactions.
I want you to keep in mind as well that this is capability, not operation.
Mm.
What this has been used for, we actually don't know.
Yes.
We know they can do this.
This is just what they need to achieve some other operation that we don't know about.
Yes. I will quickly get into the Muscular program, which is the first of the two GCHQ-led programs. We'll go into in a little bit of detail. Because like I said, GCHQ... is the senior intelligence gathering partner in this arrangement in terms of US citizens. GCHQ are the ones who can most effectively surveil the US population for the NSA and then hand that information back to them. That is how, you know, the cookie gets made. That is how the intelligence gets shared. And that is how, between them, the Five Eyes surveil their entire population as a whole.
Mm.
But anyway, NSA infiltrates links to Yahoo, Google, data centers worldwide, Snowden documents say. The National Security Agency has secretly broken into the main communication links that connect Yahoo and Google data centers around the world, according to documents obtained from former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. By tapping those links, the agency has positioned itself to collect at will from hundreds of millions of user accounts, many of them belonging to Americans. The NSA does not keep everything it collects, but it keeps a lot. According to a top secret accounting dated January 9, 2013, the NSA's acquisition directorate sends millions of records every day from internal Yahoo and Google networks to data warehouses at the agency's headquarters at Fort Meade. In the preceding 30 days, the reports said field collectors had processed and sent back 181 million new records, including metadata, which would indicate who sent or received emails and when, as well as the content, such as text, audio, and video. The NSA's principal tool to exploit the data links is a project called Muscular, operated jointly with the agency's British counterpart, GCHQ. From undisclosed intercept points, we actually know what those are now, it's in Cornwall, it's where the Flag 1 cable comes in. I can actually show you. One of the documents has the actual like location of that and everything. Entire data flows across fiber optic cables that can carry information among the data centers of the Silicon Valley giants. So because of the interconnected nature of the internet, here we see here, basically, Google Cloud, public internet, SSL added and removed here. But basically any information on the internet that is shared between Yahoo and Google data centers, many of which will be backing up all data on both sides for edge server reasons.
I'm just thinking, what would GFE in that?
Google front end server.
Google front end, right? Yeah, cool. That makes so they are showing there that, you know, not only can they look at, as we've discussed already, the stuff behind, but they can also just directly demand Google give them information out of the front end of their stuff as well.
Well, the thing is, this shows that Prism is ease of access. It's not actually necessary to get this information. It just makes getting the information easier.
And it also gives a very easy way to verify whether or not the information they've been given is there or not, I suppose.
You should do both.
Exactly.
That's why the you should do both is there. It's quite funny, but like that is why it's there. I will say there's a Der Spiegel article, these will all be in the notes, that say documents reveal top NSA hacking unit. This is the evidence of the existence of Tau and what they did. A lot of it is based on cold digital plumbers. They talk about adding like physical collection stuff to people's packages.
Scroll up a little bit, we'll just go through some of the paragraphs here because it'd be a nice little explanation. According to internal NSA documents viewed by Spiegel, these on-call digital plumbers are involved in many sensitive operations conducted by American intelligence agencies. Tau's area of operations range from counter-terrorism to cyber attacks to traditional espionage. The documents reveal just how diversified the tools at Tau's disposal have become, and also how it exploits the technical weakness of the IT industry from Microsoft to Cisco and Huawei. So Tau makes use of the technical weaknesses that the Bull Run program puts in place.
They're effectively cheating. It's less impressive when you know about Bull Run.
But you also seem to suggest as well that it is likely that this information about Tau that Der Spiegel got was also probably given to The Guardian as well.
Yes.
They just didn't bother to mention it for some reason.
No. A large part of the operational detail stuff was verboten for The Guardian to be able to publish. We don't know what the arrangement was because it was never made public. But this is Muscular, and Muscular really gave them unlimited access to both Yahoo and Google and others too. What I put in my notes here, what wasn't given was taken, and that they could double up. And I think also they could double blind it and make sure that what Google was giving them was genuine.
That's what I meant. You could verify that Google wasn't just feeding you garbage or generating crap because they couldn't actually monitor it all.
Well, this is...
There's another interesting point. Having a system that, you know, allows you to monitor the stuff as it passes through and demand a copy of it when it reaches the other end, means that you are basically forcing someone like Google to have the capacity to view and analyze all this stuff.
Yes.
Which is in and of itself a whole other sort of scope and remit that has to be made.
I'm just double checking our recent events here.
I mean, you might be able to consider how much extra baggage and weight is added to internet activity so that it can be formulated, tagged and monitored in this sort of sense.
Knowing about Bull Run and knowing about the fact that Google was probably involved in creating some of these systems, this is hilarious. Mm. This is a hilarious fake, essentially, from Google. Google is safe, fuck you to NSA. Company encrypts internal network. One, why wasn't it encrypted in the first place? Possibly for ease of access by the NSA. Two, the encryption they're using is likely deliberately pre-compromised as per Bull Run.
Mm.
So it's meaningless anyway. This is what I mean by a lot of this being circus and a lot of the revelations that we get about government access and government backdoors is really just these companies bending over backwards to make it easier.
Well, it's an idea me and you have discussed and I think may just make as like a mantra that we batter out on social media. If something is already known publicly, it is not a revelation, it is normalization.
A lot of it, yes. And the more times it's repeated without anything changing, the more normalized it is. Here we go. Here's the FISA court ruling for Verizon. I thought it might be interesting for people to read in full. Again, this will be in the notes. But really, this is just a copy of basically the blank warrant, which says that Verizon has to give over all phone metadata on a rolling 90-day basis in perpetuity. And again, this is a secret judgment from a secret court about a secret program, which if you in 2005, you know, asked the US government if they had secret courts that issued secret judgments, they'd deny it. Mm. And if you went to people on the street and said the US has secret judgments and secret courts, that means they can spy on you, they think you had a tinfoil hat on. But again, revelation doesn't change very much. We have direct evidence of secret courts with secret judgments, and nothing changes because it is not about information. It is about power. Again, here's another one. This is from Circa. It goes into the fact that in the dying days of the Obama administration, they admitted that Obama had essentially violated the constitutional rights of millions of Americans. The title here is just Obama Intel Agency secret that conducted illegal search on Americans for years. The National Security Agency, this is from 2017, under former President Barack Obama, routinely violated American privacy protections while scouring through overseas intercepts and failed to disclose the extent of the problems until the final days before Donald Trump was elected president last fall.
Can you remember all the noise about this? Oh, FISA courts, FISA hearing this, hearings about that. All these people they brought up, the Russiagate stuff, all this nonsense. None of it really changed. And at no point did anyone ever mention that the tools the Obama government was using were, you know, extra legal. Well, you know, the whole idea that you could go to like these FISA courts and have this stuff challenged is complete nonsense. These things exist purely because they cannot be challenged.
Well, there was a lot of hubbub at the time. I'll get on to a lot of the denials and the contemporary actions, but I want to press home to people that the legality here doesn't matter. There's been a lot of claims that, well, what was done was technically legal.
Mm.
It wasn't. But the legality of it doesn't matter. Because
it's extra legal. It is beyond, you know, any form of policy or procedure or, you know, thing that you could be taught as a form that we repeat. It is the exception and the kind of most purest form.
It is, yes. It doesn't matter if it's legal or not because it exists above legality. More than 5%, one of every 20 searches seeking upstream internet data on Americans inside the NSA's so-called Section 702 databases violated the safeguards Obama's intelligence chief vowed to follow in 2011, according to one classified internal report viewed by Circa. The Obama administration self-disclosed the problems at a closed-door hearing on October 26 before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that set off alarm. Trump was elected less than 2 weeks later. It's them burying this in the news cycle. By 2016, no one was thinking about Prism anymore.
Yeah. The next bit here is the normally supportive court. Excoriated administration officials saying the failure to disclose the extent of the violations earlier amounted to an institutional lack of candour and that the improper searches constituted a very serious Fourth Amendment issue. But FISA were the people who signed the agreement from the FBI nearly a decade prior, saying, oh, by the way, forever and ever, you will write a 90-day warrant that allows us to look at whatever phone data we want.
Yeah. Here's another one, again, from 2016. US Foreign Intelligence Court did not deny any surveillance requests last year. Justice Department documents show FISA court continued trend by rejecting none of the 1,457 requests.
I think you'll find this demonstrates that the system is perfect. I mean, they wouldn't look at anyone that wasn't a terrorist.
There's a lot more to get through here, so it probably is going to be about 2 hours. But I just wanted to get through the fact that the legality of this is a dead-end discussion.
Well, it is something that is carried out by the law, you know, in the supreme sense. It is not even that you would struggle to do this or would get in trouble for doing this. You literally can't do this stuff because you are a subject. In the sort of in the realist sense.
Yes. I'll quickly close these because we'll need some of these. We need those two still. I don't think we need the Wikipedia article still. But I want to get on to now Winstop. I showed it here. I talked about it here. Winstop is the second party collection. It's basically everyone involved in collection who isn't America.
That's like the broad brush.
Yeah, it's the broad brush. It's the Five Eyes, as somebody just mentioned in chat. Yes, this Prism is not the Five Eyes, but Winstop is the rest of the Five Eyes. Winstop, last 30 days. These are, by the way, 500 million records a day that Winstop is collecting. Most viable source is DS300. DS300 is GCHQ. It's the GCHQ's bulk collection program, which on its own, GCHQ in the 30-day period via the cable taps is committing 14 billion records to XKeyscore, which is the NSA's database. So GCHQ goes into the cables. It has access to the cables because of Bull Run and because of the vulnerabilities that telecommunications firms have to build into their equipment. They have to build them there.
What year is this as well?
2013.
This is from the same year, right.
I believe this is 2013.
And then we've got the next page as well.
It says 1 month, hundreds of millions of records. They're basically just celebrating how much they can spy on people.
Mm.
But DNR versus DNI, basically DNR is like direct intercept stuff. DNI is like metadata stuff, but still. 14 billion records via a single program. It is conceivable that they are surveilling as much of the internet as technically possible. This is as dragnet surveillance can get. And I just want to impress that on people, really. 14 billion. And there's a document I don't have here because of time that is basically them boasting about KeyScore, which is the central NSA computer, saying that over the course of years, well, they obviously would do, they have trillions of records stored.
Yeah.
So trillions of interactions. They are, as much as was feasible possible in 2013, storing the entire internet in a decrypted format.
So they could literally at one point just go back through it all and charge everyone for things that they did decades ago that are now illegal.
I found a very interesting piece here from The Register, which I think is possibly the most damning stuff about The Guardian. The article itself is interesting because it talks about the fact that Oman has the exact same agreement with the NSA that GCHQ did.
Mm.
But GCHQ does the spying here, basically. Top secret details of British covert surveillance program included the location of Class Destine British base tapping undersea cables in the Middle East.
Yeah, that's the bit we'll get further down here. The British secret spy base is part of a program called named Circuit and also referred to an overseas processing center, OPC-1.
That is the direct equivalent of Incensor that we'll get to, and Flag One, which is the UK cable.
Yeah. It is located at Seeb on the northern coast of Oman, where it taps into various undersea cables passing through the Strait of Hormuz and to the Persian Arabian Gulf. Seeb is one of a three-site GCHQ network in Oman. It locations codenamed Timpani, Guitar and Clarinet. So black sites then.
Essentially.
That's basically what they're discussing here. Near the Strait of Hormuz, can monitor Iraqi communications. I'm sure it'll only be Iraqi communications they monitor. Clarinet in the south of Oman is strategically close to Yemen. British National Telecom, BT, referred to within GCHQ and American NSA under the ultra-classified codename Remedy, and Vodafone Cable, former cable and wireless company, aka Gerontic.
So, yeah, that's BT.
Mm.
The one we talked about at Flag One is only cable and wireless.
But further here, are the two top earners of secret GCHQ payments running into tens of millions of pounds annually. The actual locations of such codenamed access points into the worldwide cable backbone are classified three levels above top secret and labelled Strap 3. The true identities of the companies hidden behind codenames such as Remedy, Gerontic Streetcar or Pinnage are classified one level below this as Strap 2. After these details were withheld, the government opted not to move against the Guardian newspaper last year for publishing above top secret information at the lower level designated Strap 1.
So what the Guardian published was only Strap 1. There are two levels above that which we only have a partial picture of because the Guardian destroyed the files.
We keep going here. This includes details of the £1 billion interception storage system Project Tempora, which revealed in 2013 and which have triggered parliamentary inquiries in Britain and Europe in cases of the ECHR. The Guardian was forced to destroy hard drives of leaked information to prevent political embarrassment over extensive commercial agreements with these and other telecommunications partners who have secretly agreed to tap their own and their customers or partners' overseas cables for the intelligence agency GCHQ. Intelligence chiefs also wish to conceal the identities of countries helping GCHQ and its US, the partner of the NSA, by sharing information on providing facilities.
BT and Vodafone Cable and Wireless also offer extensive long-distance fibre optic communications network throughout the UK, installed and paid for by GCHQ, NSA, or by a third-party little-known intelligence support organisation called the National Technical Assistance Centre. So the UK and global telecommunications and internet trunk technology is built by GCHQ and the NSA. I'll quickly get into the UK side stuff now, which is Incensor, Detronic Incensor and Windstop. This again, we're back to the electrospaces.net here, but it goes to pretty good technical detail about the flag stations. This is Flag Atlantic 1, FA1. This is Nigella. Screwjack Farm, and this is the Incensor program as part of Windstop. So it goes Windstop, Incensor, Geronic, which is the code name for cable and wireless, and the specific facility is Nigella. I know it's a little bit complicated, but that is how the code names work here. Last week, joint reporting by the British broadcaster Channel 4 and the German regional broadcaster WDR and the German newspaper, long German word, SZ, identified Nigella as an interception facility at the intersection of cable and wireless and Reliance cables at Screwjack Farm. Again, this is all information that was deliberately withheld by the Guardian via an agreement with the government. And this is why I think Glenn Greenwald's a lot of shit, to be honest. There, just north of the Polygia Cottage in Cornwall, is a large building that was constructed in 2001 for Flag Telecom Limited for £5.3 million. It serves as a terminus for two ends of the submarine octave cable, one from the Atlantic, which lands at the beach of nearby Senen, and one that crossed the channel to Brittany in France. That is Flag Atlantic 1. This is the terminus. This is Screwjack Farm. I believe that's on one of my slides here as well.
Whatever you do, don't go visit this place and tell them we sent you.
Please do not. But yes, that is Screwjack Farm in Cornwall, aka Flag One. aka Nigella, aka Vodafone, codename G-tronic. So those are details that are technically above top secret, and The Guardian entered legal agreements with the UK government not to publish.
Yeah. The cable was initially owned by Flag Telecom. So the organisation who have been set up to monitor the information were also the people that installed the infrastructure. Convenient that, isn't it? Where Flag stands for Fiber Optic Link Around the Globe, this company was renamed into Reliance Global Com when it became a fully owned subsidiary of the Indian company Reliance Communications in March 2014. Reliance Global Com was again renamed into Global Cloud Exchange. More important is another much longer submarine cable, which also owned by this company, and which has its landing point in the shore of Porto Cunho, a few miles southwest of Skewjack Farm, connecting the United Kingdom to Japan through the Mediterranean, with landing points in Egypt, the Saudi Peninsula, India, Malaysia, Thailand, Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, Japan, 28,000 kilometres long. This cable has two fibre pairs, each capable of carrying up to 40 separate light wavelengths, and each wavelength can carry 10 gigabits of traffic. This gives a potential capacity of 800 gigabits per second, but in 2009, only 70 gigabits were used. That's, again, an admission there that the company that was installing these lines was installing them directly under the role and remit of a surveillance program, not under a commercial program for transferring data.
Yes. Because the owner of the cables, Reliance Globacom, is not a cooperating partner of GCHQ, they hacked into their network.
Oh, yes, I bet they're not a cooperating partner.
By getting additional router monitoring web pages and performance statistics for GTE Global Telecom's exploitation, interception equipment, how the actual interception takes place can be learned from an article in The Guardian from June 2013, which provides some details about the highly sophisticated computer equipment at cable tapping points. So if they won't cooperate, they just set up a shed next to the cable and tap the cable. But other cables, there's a map here, have got cooperating partners. GCHQ Butte, it talks about here. It talks about G-tronic, which is Vodafone now, basically. Cable and Wireless was involved in these 29 cables, either had direct cable ownership or indefeasible
right of use.
Yes, or leased capacity. So Flag Atlantic 1, Flag Europe Asia, Apollo North, Apollo South, Solus, UK Netherlands, UK France, Europe India Gateway, and GLO1 are all tapped.
Scroll down here further as well. Disclosed excerpts from internal GCHQ wiki pages show that Cable and Wireless held regular meetings with GCHQ from 2008 until at least 2010 in order to improve the access possibilities, like selecting which cables and wavelengths would provide the best opportunities for capturing the communications GCHQ wanted.
by the way, Cable and Wireless is only one of the partners in terms of... in terms of handing over records. This is, now we're talking about Incensor, which is DS300. DS300 is what is referred to in the slideshow we saw earlier that has 14 billion records generated by it. Among the documents about GCHQ cable tapping is also a small part of the internal glossary. Here we go. It contains the entry about Incensor, which says this is a special source collection system at Butte. This is further specified as the G-tronic delivery from the Nigella access, which can be viewed in XKeyscore, which is the NSA's database. And that alone, this single access point created 14 billion records into this database. Tempura talks about the fact that they have the storage capacity and analysis capacity by using the additional capabilities of XKeyscore from which it's derived. It talks about hacking operations, and the fact that they can use this to basically intercept any traffic anywhere and change it. But I want to quickly go through the scale of this, because the scale is even bigger than this shows. Where is this? Here we go. This is how telecommunications companies function as an armed security state, because these are the code names unmasked with cooperation with just GCHQ, and just between about 2008 and 2010. These are in a separate article that's linked in the description. They're collated from different articles, and they're actually on the Wikipedia page for mass disclosure. Well, anyway,
it might be worth mentioning as well to some of the Americans in the chat.
Yeah,
British telecommunications isn't just like a phone and internet service provider.
No,
they are the people who are directly tasked with line service and
the installation
of services as well.
Openreach is the biggest. We did get a donation here saying for £10, saying you should dig into Promise when you get the chance. That was the precursor to all of this and arguably built the framework for how Prism was implemented. I believe that was like a Cold War operation. We don't really, unfortunately, we don't have time to go into some of the precursor stuff. I just want to get through some of the head-spinning scope of the operational details. These are just operations that Snowden had access to alone. So you got Verizon Business, BT, Vodafone, Global Crossing, Level 3, Patel, Interroute, and AT&T, all with code names, all collaborating.
All being paid to do
so. Yes, and all being paid to do so, collaborating with the NSA and GCHQ to hand over. They weren't being court-ordered, really. Some of them may have been, we don't actually know. But they were enthusiastically handing over the data of their own customers.
Because this is like the level beyond, you know, Facebook or Twitter or, you know, WhatsApp sell your information.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the service provider for your phone signal or your internet provider just giving away everything.
The issue as well is that later providers build on the infrastructure. So cable and wireless became Virgin Media. And BT still operates a lot via Openreach. All of these arrangements are still in place, and all of this still operates via the information and intelligence laundering, which means that the UK government can gather mass information on American targets, and the American government can gather mass information on UK targets, and they can swap, allowing them to have total access to each other's populations and their own populations via this agreement. But it's, I might have to abridge some of this. There's just so much of the scope here. I will quickly move on. There's an article from The Guardian saying MI5 via GCHQ went too far over phone and internet monitoring. They're referring here directly to the bulk collection. They actually get it wrong here. It's not 600 million, it's 14 billion, 39 gigabytes of internet traffic a day, which is laughable. I think that was only the muscular program. But it shows that MI5 even got squeamish about this. Like, what, you're surveilling the whole internet?
Yeah.
That's just the Wikipedia on muscular, which is a good place to start if you want to research it yourself and have a look at some of the slides. What I will go into now is the second-party partnerships. These are the second- and third-party partnerships, and these are who is involved in WinStop.
This is some of the SIGINT stuff that was mentioned previously.
Yes. That's just signals intelligence. That's basically all intelligence gathering. But if you look at this, they have partners in NATO. They have the second party Five Eyes, which are directly giving them full cable access. So all of the Five Eyes have projects like Incensor and like Tempora that are gathering and analysis tools that feed in to the US's tools. All of them have that capability. But there is intelligence reporting from third-party countries, 33 countries, from 28 countries in NATO, from the SS, basically from the European 14 Eyes agreements. So they are able to leverage basically all of the internet traffic globally. It's suspected that many of these countries have flag stations that are tapped as well, either by GCHQ or the NSA directly, covertly, or by a cooperating telecommunications providers. They're able to get an entire picture of the internet here. So I just wanted to impress that on people. Again, these electrospaces sources are very worthwhile. I would advise reading them because basically it shows there is no oversight. Third-party members give over varying amounts of information, but the biggest does come from this, you know, the Five Eyes, which are some of the major economies in the world, including Canada, New Zealand, Australia and the UK. Spycable revealed how telecoms firm worked with GCHQ. One of the largest UK telecommunications firms had a leading role in creating the surveillance system exposed by Edward Snowden. It can be revealed. This is talking about cable and wireless, went as far as providing traffic from a rival foreign communications company, handling information sent by millions of internet users worldwide over the spies. They were very enthusiastic partners, is what I'm trying to get forward here. The firm, which was bought by Vodafone in July 2012, was part of a program called Mastering the Internet, under which British spies used private companies to help them gather and store swathes of internet traffic, a quarter of which passes through the UK. Top secret documents leaked by the whistleblower Edward Snowden, used to Channel 4 News. It's the same stuff we're talking about. But it's really showing that they went out of their way. They went further.
The company rented on a company rented space on a cable owned by Indian telecoms company Reliance Communications, as we mentioned before, that stretched from Asia across the Middle East and landed in Port of Cunthro, Cornwall. Reliance's transatlantic cable lands in Senen Cove, 6 miles to the north. The two cable comes together at nearby Skewjack Farm.
Yep.
Documents show that in 2011, this allowed Britain's spies to access all traffic from Alliance's main cable and send it to the GCHQ base up the coast in Bude.
So this shows that cable and wireless are a very enthusiastic arm of the UK security state.
It's almost like, as a private company, they are acting in the one space that GCHQ couldn't act in themselves.
Yes. I want to talk quickly again about the fact that AT&T helped US spy on internet on a vast scale. It was revealed years later, this is 2015 by the way, that AT&T and Verizon were not only handing over metadata, they were handing over the same data GCHQ was.
Mm.
They were handing over blanket cable internet taps that allowed the US to effectively spy on the rest of the world, which meant the rest of the world could focus on spying on US citizens. It's amazing how closely and how explicit that relationship was in terms of who spied on who gave who what, and the swap shop of information to give them a complete picture here. But yeah, the National Security Agency's ability to spy on vast quantities of internet traffic passing through the United States has relied on its extraordinary decades-long partnership with a single company, AT&T. While it has been long known the American communications companies work closely with the spy agency, newly disclosed NSA's documents show that the relationship with AT&T has been considered unique and especially productive. One document described it as highly collaborative, while another lauded the company's extreme willingness to help. I just wanted to get this up from The Guardian, because this is The Guardian talking about how other media outlets have been served Dino this is, and we won't comply with them, and as we read in the Register there, to save their own skin, The Guardian and Glenn Greenwald refused to disclose the
and
private...
actually destroyed yeah. the data under yes. the orders of we're not sure who.
The UK security services. This should show you that Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian participated knowingly in a limited hangout which denied you the scale of what was going on, denied you the specifics of who was collaborating and how enthusiastically they were collaborating, whilst also lording over other media outlets that they were the pious ones. Again, this is why I don't take Glenn Greenwald particularly seriously, because he's a career journalist, and if he'd really learned what was going on from these intercepts, if he'd really learned what was going on in terms of the blanket surveillance of the internet, he'd basically be some sort of like Bin Laden figure in a cave shouting death to America. But instead he's on Twitter mildly protesting with indignation the further excesses of the security state, as he was also involved in limiting people's knowledge at the behest of the security state and drip feeding this information and allowing it to be obfuscated and shown years later when the impact will be lessened. This has always been normal practice. In terms of the US tapping, 33 Thomas Street and the infamous Room 641A are two points that people have known about for years, but were revealed by the Snowden files to be both metadata and internet collection points, which have probably existed at least since 9/11, but possibly before 9/11. If you want to read up on them, they are very, very good kind of hat tips that this has been going on for a very long time. I'm going to have to go through stuff at great speed here. Section 702 is the section that allowed the upstream and PRISM stuff to become codified in law, but it really existed, I think, prior to that. And like I said, since 1978, they've had many of these capabilities. There's a great article here that I want to read a little bit of. because it's a real illustration of how the information laundering side of things works. It's a real illustration of how the exchange works and how it gets around any and all oversight governments have of the spying on their own populations. I have to search in here. Yes. It's skipped me around in the document now. Give me a second.
Keep going. There you are.
Yes. It talks about the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which is basically a blank check for the UK government to do what it wants. Sets out the framework within which GCHQ and others gather information about us. But it does not apply if the information has already been gathered by a foreign agency and is simply being handed over. There is little, if any, legal regulation or oversight in that situation. Again, it is the information laundering. It is what has gone on here in terms of the exchange of information between these two powers has allowed us to have a situation where there is no oversight. If GCHQ collects, there is no oversight. And if the NSA collects, there is no oversight.
Scroll down further here. But the real irony is that in a world of common security interest, there need not be any explicit manipulation or deliberate circumvention for this to occur. Of course, if the UK cynically asked others to do its surveillance work for them, specifically to avoid UK law, this may well be unlawful. But they need not go that far to achieve the same result. If the UK alerts the US authorities about UK citizens who may be of interest to the US, the US authorities may then collect data about those UK citizens for their own purposes. Any information US authorities then obtain about those UK citizens may be freely and informally shared with the UK authorities at a later date. That process means the UK authorities have gained information about UK citizens which may have been much harder to obtain if they had acted in accordance with the RIPA and the UK legal framework. That is just a fortuitous side effect of the unregulated and formal world of international intelligence sharing.
So basically, it's fuck you, we can spy on who we want.
Yeah, we don't need laws because we are the law.
I just realised I didn't have some of these up earlier, but it doesn't really matter. Some of them were just illustrative examples. I was still on the images page for a little bit there, but that doesn't really matter. Apologies for that, though. Regulation of Investigative Powers Act. This is just an overview, if you want to read it yourself, in the notes of the law that has been kind of squinted at and interpreted to mean that...
It's like a slightly softer version of the covert human intelligence sources thing, which essentially allows not individuals in security forces, but the larger security organization itself to engage in unlawful behavior if it believes there is a large enough security threat that could be upended by engaging in such research.
Yes. Quickly have a look over here, see if we've missed anything. Because we're going to get into a little bit of stuff that we've covered before. I think it's very, very vital. I think these are the ones I didn't have up, but I'll quickly show them on screen, which are... 33 Thomas Street, which is one of the
did
ones.
Did we not just have that one up?
It wasn't on screen because I hadn't switched them.
Ah, right.
Which is a big brutalist building I use in one of the insert images because it is basically a pre-built like nuclear bomb-proof spy station and room 64-1A, which became infamous as one of the earliest revealed kind of spying points in the US. Ripper Act. This is something we talked about last week when we talked about the social media's fake and gay stuff. We talked about the Prism Files had large parts of it that were never properly talked about. This is another article by Glenn Greenwood on The Intercept in 2014. By this point, I think he'd left The Guardian. But this slide here, I believe, is discredited target. Set up a honey trap, change their photos and social media on social networking sites, write a blog purporting to be one of their victims, email/text their colleagues, neighbors, friends, leak confidential information to companies. It talks about discrediting a company. But this is operational standard procedure for GCHQ.
Mm.
And what people don't think about is how this interfaces with Prism and the amount of data they can collect. If they are willing to make up accusations, specifically sexual allegations, and, you know, go to the lengths of creating blog posts to purport to be one of your victims, imagine what they do with just all the casual information that they have. If you bring the ire in any way of the UK intelligence services, they have the full weight of internet tap to use on you. They probably have mass records on you already.
Well, they just do a quick control F, you know, big chunk is 1488.
This is some of the few operational files that we have about how, one, the spy agencies conduct themselves whilst collecting this information, and two, what they, the lengths they are willing to go to against private individuals.
See, but the thing as well, though, is that there is still a level above this, because this is only one operational aspect of a wider operational program. You know, we can only take so many elements of this and try and sort of connect them together.
Again, you have to remember, anytime you hear about an operation by the UK or US intelligence services, they have all of the Winstop and Prism infrastructure still in place. They are able to essentially surveil the entire internet.
There's Binary Surfer in chat just letting us all know, to give you an idea, having been through top level vetting, they knew exactly what porn I liked down to my favourite video at the time, where I shopped, the last time I bought alcohol, etc.
That is a level of detail that they go to, but they can do that about any individual. And they have only increased their capabilities over time. I will briefly talk about another aspect of the Prism files that is a slightly more minor part in terms of this stream, but the fact that the US doesn't have allies. Europe furious over US spying allegations. The US allegations of the US spying have unleashed a torrent of criticism and concern in Europe. If suspicions unearthed by the Spiegel that the US tapped Chancellor Merkel's cell phone, found to be true, the ramifications of transatlantic ties could be immense. It talks into the fact that I think it was Guido Fawkes who did a little bit of this, and the Spiegel, but an un-kind of mentioned thing so far has been the fact that US embassies are spy stations, and they use it to, you know, they use it for surveillance as banal as contract negotiations between private companies. And a large part of the Prism disclosures later on were the fact that the US, despite having direct access to their populations and also handing these countries massive amounts of information on their own citizens, also just goes out and spies on all their leaders and all their companies anyway, because fuck them.
No, I can remember that story at the time, actually. That there was a sort of, you know, we can almost sort of look at the fact that the previous Der Spiegel article probably exposed a little bit more about what they had learned from Snowden, purely and simply for the fact that they'd been spied on directly by the NSA.
I'm convinced that this is the only reason we know as much as we do via the German press, is because they were mildly pissed off by Chancellor Merkel being spied on, but they still maintain relations with the US because these are client states.
Well, scroll down for a little second here. You know, German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle took the unusual step Thursday morning of summoning the US ambassador, John B. Emerson, who was set to meet with the minister in the afternoon. A source at the Foreign Ministry told Spiegel Online on Thursday that Westerwelle will meet the ambassador in person. So he's going to give him an absolute hairdryer and hopefully a very angry German accent and tone.
This was a big splash. What was reported on most vociferously was the elite class protesting that this had affected them in some way. Most of the revelations in terms of metadata collection and just blanket spying were met with shrugs in Germany, because they knew. They'd been handed large amounts of information on their own population by the NSA, so they must have known. Worse than 1984! It's very... It's almost sad in that they're going, well, We collaborate. Why did you spy on me? And it's just a sign that, again, the US does not have allies. It has client states. Another aspect of this is Operation Aurora Gold, which you don't have time to go into in detail, in basically that the NSA hacks cell phone networks worldwide and uses them to spy on world leaders, and it does so partially via embassies. The NSA's assistance in the Libya operation is not an isolated case. There's a little bit of the Arab Spring stuff sprinkled in here, which we really do not have time to get into.
But we've mentioned before, I mean, there's the chapter in Nemesis on Tunisia, which we covered. There was like the bread tube security state one that we did, where that covered some of the stuff from Grey Zone and discussing how many geopolitical NGOs used in Gulf War and latterly the Syria sort of situation were all then latterly used to hire influencer people and make messaging about COVID.
Yes. A huge amount of stuff in terms of like just text messages we talked about earlier and just direct phone tapping that America did to its own allies, largely. In quotes, its own allies. And how it tries to, if anything can be hacked, it will be hacked. And we could assume this in the abstract, but you know, things like Aurora Gold show us that it is true. You can't refute any of this. And we're building to somewhere. Don't you worry about that. We are going somewhere. Again, I want to get into and impress on people the fact that as time has gone by, all of this has been declared there at various points by various people illegal or unconstitutional. This is from 2016. Public advocate, FBI's use of prison surveillance data is unconstitutional. I believe this is pre the Obama administration. Mm. This is pre-election. This is before the court documents were unsealed, but this is the first sign of that. The public advocate appointed by the nation's secretive surveillance court last year argued that a little known provision of the prison program violated the constitution, but the court disagreed with her. She was basically the person appointed as a fig leaf to oversight the program. And she was overruled by the FISA court from the program. I just thought that was funny. There's another one here from the Brennan Center for Justice, how the FBI violate the privacy and rights of
tens of thousands. This is from 2019.
Again, this is all of these kind of like grumblings are still ongoing, but it doesn't matter.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if it's declared.
Because even if all of this stuff got cleaned up and the NSA was given a whole, you know, accountability remit that it had to fill out, and there was some sort of large anti-corruption program that shuffled everyone around, and they said, look, we're not doing this anymore. They would just turn around to GCHQ, who's been doing the job for them anyway, and keep going like that.
Basically, this is talking about the first opinion, the second opinion. It all gets tied up in the courts with endless appeals. But we've gone from 2016 to 2019 now. The FBI's appealed the decision.
Yeah, let's see the next two paragraphs here. They've got a bit here, you know, ordered remedies that the FBI is now required to implement. All of this became public because Congress in 2015 required the disclosure of significant FISA court opinions. The system worked, right? I see a very different story. This is now the fourth major FISA court opinion on Section 702 in 10 years, documenting substantial non-compliance with the rules meant to protect Americans' privacy. The opinion, moreover, reveals that the FBI is conducting literally millions of backdoor searches, including so-called batch queries that rest on the same discredited legal theory used to justify the NSA's bulk collection of American phone records. Well, all of this is irrelevant because half of this stuff was all put into motion before Section 702.
Yeah.
And then the other half of it isn't even necessarily about them searching for information because they already have backdoor access that they are free to engage with and whenever they please.
Well, this is the result of now the other appeal, I believe the fourth appeal. NSA surveillance exposed by Snowden was illegal, court rules, 7 years on. This reminds me of the Iraq inquiry, in that this is what the rule of law looks like. No one has been held to account. The only person who's been charged with a crime is Edward Snowden.
Yeah, court says officials who defended Dragnet were not telling the truth. Or not telling truth, sorry, I should say, because even though this article is 2 years old, there's still mistakes in it.
Yes. Well, let's contrast this with the reaction at the time. It's now been ruled that all this was completely illegal, but fuck you, nothing's going
to
happen.
Can we quickly go back to that one just to see what the sort of conclusion they have there is at the end? The ruling will not affect the convictions of... Are these some sort of random people who have been accidentally locked up because they've been connected to some sort of Islamic extremist program, and we should all feel sorry for them?
Nevertheless, watchdog groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union, which helped bring the case to appeal, welcome the judge's verdict. Today's ruling is a victory for our privacy rights.
The ACLU said.
It makes plain that the NSA's bulk collection of Americans' phone records violated the Constitution. Well, I've got bad news for you.
Look at the line above, though.
Yeah.
Even though this stuff has all been found out to be illegal, the court ruled the illegal surveillance did not taint the evidence introduced at their trial. So even though they've said this entire process is illegal, they will not set the precedent that information that comes from this process can't be used in a trial.
Amazing. Amazing. The reaction at the time...
Mafia investigates mafia, finds no corruption.
The phrase at the time was legal and limited. This is from June 7th, the day after the initial revelations. President Obama offered a robust defense of newly revealed surveillance program on Friday as more classified secrets spilled into the public, complicating a summit meeting with China's new president focused on partly on human rights and cybersecurity. Mr. Obama departed from his script at the healthcare event in California to try to reassure Americans that he had not abused government authority by collecting telephone logs and foreign email messages.
Mr. Obama, what does this have to do with healthcare?
Yeah. But the disclosure hours later of secret contingency planning to target other countries' possible cyber attacks made his get together with President Xi Jinping later in the day all the more awkward.
Cyber attacks by the Chinese are high on the American agenda. The latest of three documents published over 3 days by The Guardian added to the understanding of the Obama administration's approach to national security in an age of multifaceted threats and became another factor in the renewed debate over the balance between privacy and security.
This is how it was reported at the time, though. It was all, like, fake.
Once a critic of President George W. Bush's hawkish policies, Mr. Obama was ready with an explanation for why he has preserved and extended some of them when a reporter asked him at the healthcare event if he could assure Americans that the government was not building a database of their personal information. Nobody's listened to your telephone calls, Mr. Obama said. That's not what this program's about.
Narrator voice. This is what this program was about.
See, I can't do the Obama voice.
XKeyscore is a giant NSA database.
That's not what this program's about.
GCHQ generated 14 billion records, a large percentage of which were of Americans, over a month period. It's just... it's funny here, but it was not clear whether there would be a popular backlash to the programs beyond some outrage on Twitter and Facebook. Even critics like Mr. Durbin were skeptical. Many Americans interviewed around the country on Friday shared concerns about their civil liberties, but expressed a certain grudging resignation as well.
But the tone here, the New York Times writers writing as if all of this has just been exposed when it hasn't.
No.
And if they'd seen the same information that the people in The Guardian had seen, they would know this. Or maybe they already do.
Well, the point here is that it was... The line at the time was legal and limited.
Mm.
And it's very clear that that was just a lie. There's another article here. I just want to quickly illustrate the fact that... What did Congress really know about NSA tracking? Basically, this goes into the fact that... Even people who were briefed on the existence of things like PRISM didn't know what they were being told.
Yeah. No, there seems to be a repeated tone here that, don't worry, some very clever and competent people are making sure that only the right data is analysed and we are totally not just fire-hosing all your information into databases that we can later scrape for any crimes.
Yes. Rockefeller says in this case he had not been told about the two surveillance programs in question. But another member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Republican Susan Collins from Maine, says she was never briefed and don't even tell her she couldn't have just asked more questions. Well, how can you ask when you don't know the program exists? It's an amazing... revelation that people who are on basically like the National Security Council, members of Congress on the National Security Agency's phone, they're supposed to be on the committees for all of these, do not know even the questions to ask to get operational details.
Look, further down here, I had, along with Joe Lieberman, a monthly threat briefing, but I did not have access to this highly compartmentalized information. So what's a member of Congress to do if you're not on a committee privy to this kind of national security information? How do you get informed? The White House says members of Congress have asked to review classified reports, but here's how that would work. First, you would have to know what to ask for. Then you walk into a secure room, you can't bring your cell phone in, you can take notes, but you can't keep them with you afterward, so you're relying completely on memory by the time you walk out of that room. Very much the same if you wish to view any of the EU Central Commission's
think about how head-spinning the information we've had to relay to you is.
Yeah.
And how head-spinning it will be to a 70-year-old congresswoman who was born in the midst of World War II. It's incredulous that these people could offer oversight. Therefore, you have to ask, who is in charge of these programs in terms of sovereignty? And how do they maintain themselves if they are not, you know, thought up by the elected lawmakers? Anyway, Dianne Feinstein, who's, you know, Dianne Feinstein.
Still around.
Yes.
But yeah, this one's just an example of her basically saying the exact same thing. It's, oh, well, we didn't know until Edward Snowden came out and told us all about it.
Well, her reassurance here really is, these programs were within the law and part of our obligation to keep Americans safe.
And then we go even further on to someone who still tries to feign sort of ignorance, but was directly involved and must have been in some way involved in the oversight of these programs.
The James Clapper stuff is, it's like they are laughing at you with this. Like, this is just them laughing at you. I will read this part here. James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, denied Tuesday that he lied to Congress when he falsely testified during the Obama administration that the government does not wittingly collect the telephone records of millions of Americans. The head of the U.S. intelligence community under former President Barack Obama, Mr. Clapper, recalled his 2013 testimony in light of the National Security Agency reportedly abandoning a controversial warrantless mass surveillance program he previously denied existed.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't lie. I made a big mistake, and I just simply didn't understand what I was being asked about, Mr. Clapper said on CNN. I thought of another surveillance program, Section 702 of the FISA Act, which, when I was being asked about Section 215 of the Patriot Act at the time, I just didn't understand that.
So he's been asked about the Patriot Act. He said, oh no, we don't conduct mass surveillance because of that, because they conduct it via another act. But that's, again, they are laughing at you, and none of these people will ever be held to account, even though they lied directly to Congress. The rule of law does not, as we'll get onto, does not exist. There's a few more things here. There's just a funny one I found. This is one of the few kind of full-throated defenses of PRISM. This is written in Foreign Policy by a guy called John Aquila. It's rational security in defense of PRISM. How else can we smoke terrorists out of their hidey holes? Well, who is John Aquila? He is from the RAND Corporation. And in 1999, he wrote a foundational policy document called The Emergence of New Politique Towards American Information Strategy.
See, I'd be very interested in his 2021 there. Whose story wins?
Yes.
I think that's maybe a future stream.
We have looked at this, and he is basically one of the people who called for like full spectrum informational dominance of the United States of the type that Winstop is. So that's... I don't know, that was just an amusing one to me. Right, it's getting a bit long in the tooth now. We're going to go over what we said we would, but I think it's time, after hitting you with all of this information, to really get to some conclusions. I think it's safe to say that we can justify all of these by the information that you've just been imparted. If you don't feel we can, we'll have all the notes down below. We'll have there's a community post. Go and look through all of this, because all of this is really what we can surmise from...
Or send us money on Substack and we'll do a little condensed write-up for you if you choose not to view the links yourself. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
As conclusions from a security point of view, the surveillance was completely unlimited. Any information they did not already have access to, they were seeking access to. There was not a single restraint on NSA or GCHQ action. The way the information was used was not limited to security operations and could be as banal as influencing contract negotiations between private businesses. Data was collected on everyone in every way it was possible to do so and could be used for any purpose and shared with any agency, as we've seen. The conclusions about telecoms. All large technology companies and telecommunications companies and social media companies in the USA and the UK are an extension of the security state. If they are not, they will be forced to be so.
And rewarded for their loyalty, of course.
To the tune of tens of millions, yes. All communications infrastructure in the UK and US is compromised to allow for blanket data collection, as are all forms of encryption. The conclusions about the rule of law, which I think are possibly the most far-reaching. I don't know, do you want to read these?
There are secret courts which issue secret judgments allowing governments to spy on their entire populations in an unlimited capacity. When these secret courts were consulted, they did not deny any requests. Politicians, governments, tech executives, and media directly lied about these programs and their extent before, at, during, and after the revelations. The US and UK government directly endangered their populations and businesses by forcing the building of backdoors into almost all forms of technology or software. I think we can even go real higher than this.
Yeah.
These programs started off with no judicial oversight.
No.
They started, you know, as I described earlier on, almost like a, you know, these sort of little, you know, black box operations, no communication inside or out other than to, you know, elements of GCHQ or NSA or the very small limited number of people in cable and wireless or British Telecom that were in the know or weren't in the know and acting on their behalf, you know, completely unawares, which yes. is just as possible. But it goes to show that, you know, the rule of law dictates that if you are the law, if you are the highest, you know, element in the land, you do not need to bother about whether it's illegal or illegal, because anything you will be doing will be extra legal. It will be governance and power wielded in an aspect of society that no one else by the whole complex of law around them is even allowed to touch.
And the conclusions part I put here, just power, is that GCHQ blackmails, slanders and discredits private individuals and businesses using this information and fake information as a matter of policy.
This is part of the social media's faking gay stuff.
Yes.
Where we talk about them, as we mentioned earlier, doing things like deliberately try to discredit movements or people or organizations through, you know, scraping their information, finding tidbits of something and then connecting them to something else that isn't real. And then, oh, maybe you're using some AI software to doctor some images of you doing indecent stuff with children or something.
The US government does not have allies and will use unlimited informational warfare against any nation or its population. These nations' ruling class, in turn, allow this to happen as they are client states of the US military and intelligence services.
Yes, I think this is a vital point to understand as well. I mean, this is something I was discussing, sort of slightly unrelated with someone earlier on, about, you know, the reason why Europe had to be deconstructed during the two world wars is that any form of European empire would have to be anti-American.
Yes.
Because it would either be anti-American or subservient to America. There is no, you know, in politics, there is no such thing of compromise. Doubly so when you get to the point where you're dealing with these large, complex states that act through shadowy sort of figures and bodies. It's only ever espionage and tricks and subversion and power. There is no such thing as, you know, mutual assurance or agreement.
Well, we've distilled the last two hours down to those four slides, but I wanted to distill all those down to basically one slide.
Mm.
In that we have brought you through this process. We have shown you all of this evidence and all of these wide-ranging programs that create trillions of points of data on you to essentially say that you live in a security state. You must make peace with that. That you live in a security state. The security services are one of the parts of the sovereign power.
It's Miranda rights.
Yeah.
Anything you can and will see, anything you will see, what's the phrase?
Anything you say can and will be used against the court of law, yes. There is no rule of law.
No.
The judiciary, the courts offered no challenge to any of this.
Yeah, functionally you are put into the position of a subordinate first Yeah. And then law formalizes the relationship.
And again, this took place over multiple administrations, supposedly politically diametrically opposed ones, which shows that you cannot vote the security forces away. They are a permanent presence, and all of this was built no matter what was going on in the political churn below them. And elected officials are subordinate to the security agencies, and quite often they do not even know...
As I would say, that does say Agent G's, but we understand.
Yes, I did it wrong. It wouldn't be one of our streams that I type up. But yeah, elected officials are subordinate to the security agencies. And it's important to understand where they sit in the power structure, in that they sit above democracy, they sit above government, and they sit above, you know, political process as we see it on the front end. They are, again, part of the sovereign. I have some more notes here that are kind of my little notes at the end here. The security services operate on behalf of sovereign power. They operate in secret because they are the exception by which sovereign power operates. Their leadership is composed of the most deeply connected members of the ruling elite class. They are the cloaked fist behind the niceties, the velvet glove of Western liberal democracy, and their existence and actions refute much of what is espoused about that system. PRISM and related larger programs are simply a small part of the last 20 years of intelligence operations aimed at domestic populations. You live in a security state in which reform is impossible. Liberal democracy cannot hold real power to account. The only person who has ever been charged with a crime as a result of the prison leaks is Edward Snowden, and the only country he could seek refuge in was Russia. None of the liberal democracies would take him. The scale of the revelations from 2013-2014 were numbing, and much of the public tuned out of or were unable to piece together the complex web of programs being revealed but not widely reported. The prison reporting was largely coloured by Glenn Greenwald himself, who became a semi-household name. The Guardian made a deal to destroy the original drives and did not disclose the telecommunications partners and collaborators as part of a strategy for survival. Other criticism mainly came from established left perspective, and many blamed the outgoing Republican administration, despite the program being the product of multiple administrations.
Well, you saw the framing in one of the other articles as boo-hoo, what about the Muslims who are being, unlawfully monitored?
The Obama administration was not open to criticism, and the media was still treating Obama like a magical Negro. Much of the prison reporting is missing, deleted, poorly archived, or behind a paywall. Much of its more insipid aspects, such as GCHQ code names like Incensor, seem blacklisted or obscured from Google. When I type in a lot of the search terms that I had to kind of work around, they didn't show me anything. They showed me either like an incense producer, or they showed me complete nonsense.
Mm.
Even though like GCHQ code name together in quotes, I used nothing in a lot of cases. I had to basically go through different links and different articles and different sources and cross-reference them that way. Search engines have been deliberately made useless for researching this information. And like I said, a lot of it has basically been made to disappear. You are not supposed to think about it, because if you piece it all together, if you see, you know, Signet, Prism, you can see Winstop, Muscular, you see all of these things together, you see the fact that quite literally the entire internet is surveilled in real time as much as is technically possible, and it is all done without judicial review, and it is done on a blanket basis. And if you told someone that, even now, they would think you were paranoid.
Well, it also seems to somewhat suggest as well that the very thinking behind connecting all the different elements of the internet into the one sort of structure was for the intent and purpose of monitoring it all.
Yes. Again, it's just the amount of operations here, the amount of stuff collected, and just the sheer amount of collaboration from anyone who was involved should show you that there is no rule of law. There is no private-public distinction in terms of companies. And the last thing I want to go through is the most recent development, which is, again, the dragging out in the court of a performative narrative of, is it legal, is it not legal? There's still haggling going on now that the barn door has been closed. This is from yesterday. by the way. This is Ars Technica reporting. The FBI's most controversial surveillance tool is under threat. Review of FBI's access to foreign intelligence reveals misuse of surveillance tech. We talked about trials of you know, that have been essentially should have collapsed because of this misuse, and it's still going on. They're still able to access the FISA information. They still have backdoor access into the NSA database after 7 years of legal disclosure and damning legal judgments about this misuse. It is still being done. And there are still court cases and appeals about it because it does not matter. It is still going on. They're still doing the same haggling, and nothing can stop the power of the sovereign when it declares the situation exceptional. And that is really the point, the roundabout point that we wanted to get to with this stream. It's a great kind of worked example prism and the framework around it and all of the disclosures and the Snowden files, all of it is really a roundabout way of showing you that power does what it wants and that there is a permanent power structure above and beyond anything that can be voted for that exists in perpetuity. Again, the implications of this are very wide-ranging. Every time you think about Epstein, every time you think about GCHQ, every time you think about individuals who've been targeted and discredited, remember that behind all of this is this giant informational fist that is Winstop and Prism, that they are able to get any and all information, and if they can't find it, they will make it up. And it's difficult to do, but try and keep that in mind basically at all times when thinking about security services, because they have this capability. They have had this capability for a long time, and they are willing to use this capability for things that we would consider almost petty when it comes down to it. And there is no oversight. There is no accountability, and you cannot vote that away. I'll quickly go over. I think we've got one more super chat here. Binary Surfer, for the good work, none of you want true nightmare fuel. Imagine that sea of data on every person linked to a giant airborne network of these. Oh dear, is that the...
It's basically drones that can film, like...
Yeah, they've gone
several far. Square mile zones of cities and whatnot all at the one time.
Well,
it's all right, they don't need those, because they're going to be able to tell where you are and how you're breathing through the 5G tower feedback. The Wi-Fi router in your own home.
Extremely base there, Jay. I will simply wear a Thomas 777 Confederate flag hockey mask to avoid detection.
Yep.
I'm afraid you might get dragged off for that, though. But the stems I want to leave people with is, think about this in relation to our social media is fake and gay. This is observational. Apart from the hints from GCHQ about making up fake sexual allegations, these are observational details. We are not going into operational details of what has been done with the information.
We have no clue actually as to what the objective of this data gathering operation is.
There have
is.
Been some bits and pieces, some juicy bits about them, you know. Oh, they wiretapped a climate conference. They wiretapped Angela Merkel. They went after people who were part of the existing power structure. Boo-hoo them. But the individuals that have been targeted, the lives that have been ruined, the information that has been misused for petty reasons, was destroyed by The Guardian. And, you know, the information about certain telecoms providers and technology partners who were unmasked in the Prism files were not reported by Glenn Greenwald to save his career and save The Guardian as going concern, because the survival of a journalist's career and of a media outlet is much more important than the truth, no matter how Greenwald, The Intercept, or The Guardian will protest. They still played ball and they still hid information from the public in order to save their own skins. And, you know, being a 2 out of 10 in a world of 1 out of 10s still does not make you an excellent journalist.
No.
All it does is make you a slightly less convenient cog in the system. And again, we've had to piece all of this together and had to present it in a way that we hope is digestible. Maybe the notes will help you. I made some boo-boos with the overlay. I jumped about a little bit, but this is the best we can parse this information. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you guys for the attention, because a lot of you have stuck through this, even though it's been a very long stream with an extremely large amount of dense information. And please, when you see like security agency stories, keep all of this in mind, because it slipping out of the public imagination is what has allowed, you know, the constant revelations in quotes of the Twitter files to be in some way salacious, in that people are pretending that there is a limited capacity, that this is surprising, that this is new.
If the revelations are not genuine, it is normalization.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably be using that phrase a lot. It's rehashing of things that we already know, pretending it's only just started happening and that it will eventually stop happening. They have all the information. They have the full collaboration. They built the social media companies. They built the telecommunications companies. They laid the cables in many areas pre-tapped. They don't need to haggle with Facebook about getting your boomer memes. Well, and anyone saying so is either exposing you to limited hangout or is your enemy.
And well, for the people who can also be around for our stream on Wednesday that's coming up, keep this all in mind when we go through the Big Brother watch.
Yes.
And some of the revelations that they wish to tell us through that. I think we've carried on enough this evening. So as you said, thank you everyone for following us along.
That Ben Gale, this might be the most blackpilling stream to date. That's what you said about the last.
Yeah, you say that every time.
I'm sorry that these are such hard sits in many ways. The previous one, I think, especially for a parent, was a bit of a harder sit. Again, but keep things like Prism in mind when you encounter information like the White March. That is what's going on constantly behind the scenes to keep those people safe. These are the mechanisms that are used to protect the international pedophile. This is all public information. We've used The Guardian, The Register, The Spiegel. We haven't, and we've used certain external sites that just collate the information. They aren't bringing new information. So all of this is out there in the mainstream media. None of it is shaky. I only use things I could prove. So I don't really have it. That's the Snowden revelations in all their glory. I'm sorry nobody told you the full story before now.
But you're welcome.
But it's, yes. This isn't blackmail. Is merely reality. But thank you guys for coming. And have a good evening. We will see you for a shorter stream on Wednesday.
Do sleep comfortably.
Yeah, sleep tight.
I like how we're becoming like the...